Welcome to the Pac-12 Apostles. We got something new for y'all. We just stepped into the big leagues, baby. What's going on with these recruiting classes in the conference? UCLA has big money problems again. Oregon State has a $50 million donor, and we got to figure out who it is. The Pac-12 tournament may or may not go on, depending on testing, maybe if that doesn't affect the NCAA tournament. And we're going to talk about the message boards and the mods in the Pac-12. I'm George Reister. He's Ralph Amsden, and this is the Pac-12 Apostles. Thank you guys for listening to the Pac-12 Apostles podcast, the podcast by Pac-12 fans, for Pac-12 fans, where you get the absolute truth. We come to you guys, and we're not going to sugarcoat it. We're going to give you everything that you need, everything that you want. And you guys can shoot us a message. I'm Matt, I-M-M-A-D, at unafraidshow.com. You can tweet us at Pac-12 Apostles, or him at Ralph Amsden, me at George Reister. Yeah. What? Oh, leave a 5-star review. Despite what this man over here tells you, leave a 5-star review and a comment. And yeah, despite what Ralph tells you, because he's just okay with whatever.
Do what you feel. Do what you feel. If you feel like it's a 5-star podcast, leave 5 stars. Maybe you don't feel that way. I support the listener.
Oh, I support the listener. All right. Well, so many of you guys have taken advantage of our Easter egg in the last 2 episodes. Some of you have not heard it yet. That means you're skipping around. You're missing crucial info. So we will give it out again. The information. And some of you guys have been on top of it. And we're going to have something special for you people who take advantage of that, who know about it. But remember, you are not allowed to tell people if they don't know. Would you agree with that, Ralph?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I thought you wanted this to spread. I don't want trolls to get involved. I do want it to be fun. So, yeah, I would say if you're going to use it, then definitely use it and spread it to other people who are listeners.
No, you have to listen to get it.
Yeah, but if you're just writing it down and posting it on like a bathroom stall.
Come on, man. You can't keep a secret. Can't tell you anything. Jeez Louise, bro. Oh, man. Dude, I can't even imagine if you found out that your brothers or sisters were getting a present.
Oh, yeah. No, it's over. Oh. What's that? I'm going to get all high and mighty, but what's the Washington Post slogan? Democracy dies in darkness. I believe in democracy. I believe in keeping everything out in the open.
Oh, so were they keeping democracy in the light when their headline read about Marty Schottenheimer?
Oh my God. Where is that?
Marty Schottenheimer, NFL coach whose teams wilted in the playoffs, dies at 77. I was like, what? That might have been the worst headline I've ever seen. I mean, that was the most passive-aggressive. Actually, was that even passive-aggressive, or that was just aggressive?
That's in very bad taste. It felt very much like the Piers Morgan, Larry King send-off from a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
When Piers Morgan came out and he was like, well, he couldn't make his marriages work. Now he's dead. Admired him, but he was mean the one time we met.
Yeah, like, what? Okay, there is an element of keeping it 100 at people's funerals, though, that a lot of people don't. They don't want to talk about the bad things. They're only going to, we're not going to mention that. We're not going to mention the fact that this dude was a bad guy. We're just going to talk about all the perfect things.
Yeah, I don't know. Not too many people in my bloodline have done enough good in their life to ignore all the other stuff. So we have no choice but to keep it real, because there's not enough to, like, when there's more dirt than rug. when the rug is just a dirt hat, yeah, no, we can't sweep anything.
Okay, well, that's a good analogy for the Pac-12, because the Pac-12 is getting a new commissioner, and there's no dirt. There's not enough dirt for the to sweep under the rug. And Larry Scott's obviously on the way out, and the commissioner from the athletic director from Utah had some very interesting comments about the new commissioner. Here is what the athletic director said about the new commissioner. That the one big line, you need somebody who has experience in college athletics or somebody who has been on a campus in another position and understands the role the conference should play. So I thought that that immediately said to me that where we believed, where we had heard from John Wilner when I interviewed him on my show, on Mad Dog Sports Radio. You guys go listen to it Monday through Friday, and you guys can listen to me and Ralph as well if you guys like this on the on the Right or Wrong podcast. So, anyways, I thought that we heard from Wilner that they probably weren't going to consider current athletic directors. But I think that Utah's AD saying you should consider other athletic directors.
Oh, absolutely. It feels like an endorsement of Gene Smith before the fact. Does it not? Like it feels like they're trying to say you should be doing more than just considering the athletic director from Ohio State. Like they have experience in this conference as the AD at ASU. And you need somebody in that role. Because, I mean, he really outlines it when he says
out of Washington.
Yes, but you said that you don't think that it would be internal.
Yeah.
But he said if there's not a connection between the conference office and the athletic departments, you can't understand how to help them win. So he's saying if you want to win or you want somebody who understands how to help you win, you need somebody who has worked as an athletic director. That's as clear, crystal clear.
Not somebody
from the WTA. Right, right. Correct.
It's a different, like, okay, if you're in charge of the WTA, Women's Tennis Association, you are used to a different fight than the fight for football. Like the fight was to get the women equal pay as men. The fight was to get equal TV billing, all of these things to promote your stars. That's not the same fight, because now you're looking, you go to these, to the Pac-12, which what Larry Scott did. And then the fight is, hold up, like we need to make things equal. That's why he fought so hard for Olympic sports. Like Olympic sports do matter, but they matter a lot less than football and basketball. Because those are the revenue generating sports. So while you want them to be good in your conference and you should encourage it, you have to get football fixed and operating at a high level first.
Yes. And I also think you need somebody who sees the direction that things are going and is able to get out ahead of or at least ride on top of the current instead of always being a follower, because you're not privy to the direction that athletics is moving because you have that disconnect and you don't have those resources. And so you want somebody who can talk to six or seven different athletic directors that they used to serve with or who they work with once it moved out to other schools to be able to say, like, all right, what's the thinking on this particular issue? And that's just not something that you're going to get with anybody who isn't already within that side of the industry.
Yeah. And he also went on to say, Chris Hill, the Utah AD, went on to say, you don't want the TV piece to be so overwhelming that they don't do the first one, which is to fix football and fix all of that. He said former Big Ten commissioner Jim Delaney didn't do it by himself, make the Big Ten the highest generating revenue in their media rights deal. And he said, you have to understand it, but you don't want to get carried away because there's the whole other thing that you have to do. And that's help the campuses because the league is better if everybody wins. And that's, yes. And that's a fact, because right now in the Pac-12, Oregon's winning in terms of national brand, national recognition. USC has that built in. They just have to win football games. Washington has a shot. I mean, ish. You know, because they've been to the playoff. Arizona State is trying to overcome, you know, decades of we can do it. We're almost there. Like, it can be Washington. I mean, Arizona State can be special. You know what I mean? Like, when in reality, the Pac-12 needs to look more like the SEC in that you have one dominant team and you have two choices right at this point in time. You have Oregon and you have USC. Those are your real choices at this point. And then you need, and that's where Alabama has been that in the SEC. And then the tier down from Alabama, there's Georgia. There is, sometimes it's Auburn. Sometimes it's LSU. Like, that's the second tier down. And that's where, you know, some combination of USC or Oregon at the top, and then UCLA, USC, Oregon, Washington. Some teams have to be in that middle tier, rotating out every year. And then that third tier has to still be upper tier competitive. And then beyond that, you just need your bottom teams to be able to beat the other conferences' bottom teams. Like, you don't need them to be good, because you don't want them so good that they can beat your top teams. You want your top teams exclusive. But you want your bottom teams to still be more well-regarded than the other league's bottom teams.
It's weird because it flies in the face of that whole, like, you're only as strong as your weakest link. But not in this case, because the stronger your weakest link is, like, the more damage that you could incur.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah, you do need, as a conference, everything to sort of work in concert, which it's tough when you – and it's amazing that the SEC has figured out a way to make that work. And we've talked at length on this show that it has a lot to do with just a similar culture across the entire spectrum of the region and the tradition and everything like that, and that's not necessarily the case out here. But you do need everything to kind of work in concert while everyone is also taking aim at each other. And that's just a really unique thing. And that's why a lot of people avoid the conference first mindset altogether, and they just want to get theirs, because it so much flies in the face of what it is that of what it is that we're used to. But if you really think about it, like, let's say you're a USC fan, or let's say that you at the very least are a UFC employee. That fighting league got so big that it was able to knock the other ones out of competition, which made more money for everybody involved within the UFC. And so you at least, at the very least, if you don't have great success on the field, you still want relevance, because relevance is what's going to make you and everybody involved the most money. And what gets you relevant? Like, somebody always has to be in the news, and usually it's excellence or a complete dysfunction that will keep somebody in a news cycle, and only one of those makes you money.
Absolutely. So hopefully they get the hire right, because it is imperative that happens. And one of the things that's big time affected by the commissioner and how the conference is led is the recruiting classes. And this year you had, at least on 24/7, Oregon finished sixth, USC finished eighth. You had Cal finished 28th, UCLA rallied with only 18 commits, finished 30th, Washington 35th, and then on down, geez Louise, Stanford came up to 50th, which is not a typical, you know, Stanford class. Arizona State 53, and that's a weird class to me. Well, actually, I'll get to that in a second. And then you go Washington State 60, Colorado 64, Arizona 77. Is that everybody? No, I missed the Beavers yet. Oh, Lord. No, I had to have missed Oregon State, right?
It's possible. Did they even have
enough? Oh, my God, 109. They only had 10 commits. Okay, So
I don't think Oregon State didn't even qualify to be counted in the rivals rankings. I don't even think they're part of the rivals rankings, man.
Okay, see, here's the thing is, so there were 400 less commits signed this year than either of the previous last 2 years. So there was 2,600 and some change in 2020 and 2019. But this year, with that plus 1 year, the NCAA has created a problem. I mean, obviously the pandemic created the problem, but you've created a problem where 400 less high school students that would be getting a ride to go to school aren't doing it. And then there are so many kids stuck in the portal that can't get out because they count one for one against this 25 number. So you're going to have so many teams under the 85 scholarship limit and no way to get it back up.
Yeah. The nice built-in excuse for teams that didn't do well in the end recruiting rankings is just to say, well, this year shouldn't actually really count. And also the way that recruiting is changing. And if we decide to take eight guys out of the transfer portal instead of take a risk on eight new recruits, then those obviously don't factor into the recruiting rankings. Therefore, our standing isn't truly represented. And I think that it's fair, but you don't want to be using that as excuse. With the high school players that are available to you, you want to say, okay, everybody's in the situation. If I'm typically in the 30s, as far as my overall recruiting ranking, I don't want to be in the 70s and 80s this year, especially if everybody's sort of taking the same strategy, you know? So you have to look at it like, yeah, our change might have a built-in excuse for it, but if everyone has the same excuse, why are we dropping? And that brings me some genuine concern for Stanford, Arizona State, Arizona, and definitely Oregon State, who doesn't even make the top 110 on Rivals and barely does on 24/7.
Yeah, that's insane. I mean, that's and some people will blame it on the smaller recruiting classes, but I don't think that that's exclusively it, because you had Cal sign 19, UCLA 18, Utah 18, Washington 15, Stanford 16, and Arizona State 13. Lane Kiffin once signed a class of 13 dudes that was in the top 10. So, I mean, and when you go down, Clemson's at number, I know Clemson's separate, but they have 19 commits. They're at fifth. You have Oklahoma, 16. They're at 11th. So it's quality of recruit. And we've been over time and time again where people will try to tell you stars don't matter. Stars don't matter on an individual basis, but they do on a collective basis. That you have a better chance of winning football games with higher ranked players, as opposed to one individual kid. A two-star kid can go on to be a Hall of Famer. But when you speak in grand terms and overall, the better your recruiting classes are, the better that you're going to do. North Carolina, 14, 19 commits. Penn State, 21 with 16 commits. Like, this is the problem.
Yeah, but that excuse is that's like saying that somebody's GPA in school doesn't matter because you know somebody who got a 2.0 but went on to be a CEO. Like, they're the exception, not the rule. Like, the number one indicator that somebody is going to be successful later is if they're successful now, period. And we have metrics to quantify that. So, and if you look at where people finish consistently within the conference standings or nationally, it almost always corresponds with how they did in recruiting. And when it doesn't correspond, that's when you see people get massive raises and bigger jobs and everything like that, because they found a way in the moment to work the system and they're able to take advantage of it ultimately. But no, it is like, we absolutely use those to decide whether or not something's going to be successful, because we have 20 years of proof.
Yep. Side note, why are you dressed like you go to LSU?
Oh, man. First of all, this is a Wyoming Cowboys hat. So shout out to they just made a big offensive coordinator hire after their offensive coordinator took the Montana State job. I heard there was a couple of Pac-12 coordinators that were up for that Montana State job, so that keeps some coordinators in house. And then everyone's been talking about the best Super Bowl halftime performer ever, and I had to rep Prince, so I have the game blouses. Pancake shirt.
Purple Rain.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
That's the coldest thing when he started singing Purple Rain and then it actually started raining.
Oh yeah, there's an 8-minute NFL Films video that if you look it up on YouTube, Prince NFL Films, it's 8 minutes long, and it's the people who were responsible for putting that together, and it starts off with them saying they called Prince to tell him, hey, bad news, it's gonna rain tonight. And Prince's response was, can you make it rain harder?
It was like, yes.
Yeah. Dude,
because as a performer, there's nothing. I went to Jay-Z and Beyonce concert and it rained. That didn't deter anybody. That only made the crowd that much more into it.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. I mean, the only show I've ever been to where it was raining, it was like they were an electronica band. And then they were 9 songs and they're like, hey, guys, we want to play for you. We also don't want to die. We have all this equipment up here, and I think we might die. So they shut the whole thing down.
There are a bunch of dudes, though, that have – we paid attention to the commits. And truthfully, they're out of the commits and all that hasn't really changed a whole lot. But the transfer portal has been kind or unkind to a bunch of teams. Like USC – their class has been, like, this has been an incredible recruiting class for them, considering what last year's disaster. And then they got Katie Nixon from Colorado, the wide receiver. Yeah. Keontae Ingram, the running back, transferred from USC. I don't know how impactful that's going to be because USC can't run the football. So, they got Xavier Alford, a safety from Texas, and Ishmael Sofer.
Sopcher. Yeah, Sopcher. He was a big time recruit coming out of high school.
Yeah, he was a big time high four star recruit, transfer from Alabama. So, and
they're looking good.
Yeah, and then you have on Oregon's team, they have they don't have any official transfers yet, but they believe that they're getting the linebacker from Tennessee, and they believe that they're getting JT Tuimoloau, which would then push them into a top five recruiting class just with JT Tuimoloau. And then you have of those two teams which finished in the top two in the Pac-12, whose recruiting class would you take?
This year?
Considering that USC's class has two quarterbacks and you can only use one.
I personally, it's conditional. So if they land JT Tuimoloau, I like Oregon's class slightly better. I really, really do like USC's class. I personally would rather have Jake Garcia than both of the quarterbacks that they landed. But time will tell on whether or not I'm right on that. I thought
you like him better than Jackson Dart, who flew up the recruiting rankings.
I do. I think Jackson Dart fits more in a Graham Harrell offense. But if Graham Harrell's still there, by the time Jackson Dart's ready to throw passes, then that means USC probably did something wrong. So,
no, you are right about that. Another team that had a big time transfers, UCLA, 6 transfers. Kid from Old Dominion, Zach Charbonnet from Michigan, Dude safety from North Texas, Ethan Garbers from Washington, Cam Brown, a wide receiver from Texas A&M, and a safety from Notre Dame. Bro, like Chip Kelly, people thought he wasn't with it, dude. He's trying to win.
Maybe. I think the ocean views of the ocean in the middle of a pandemic might have been the lead recruiter on a couple of these kids.
Yep.
I think a year like this, like, why would you not want to go to LA? Like, why, if you've been cooped up in Old Dominion in Virginia, you know, and you have the opportunity to go anywhere, but the school on the California coast wants you, and you know that you could at least probably do that if we're going to continue down the road that we're on, then, you know, you might as well live in California. And yeah. So I feel like maybe Chip Kelly's doing a great job, or maybe the conditions are just set up just right to where they had the room and they're a better option just in general for people at that age, but also in a situation in which you weren't allowed to go anywhere or do anything for the last year. That's got to be super attractive.
Utah picked up transfers from Oklahoma and TJ Pledger, running back, who was very highly recruited. Chris Curry, running back from LSU. Charlie Brewer, the quarterback from Baylor. So now they have a quarterback. And Quindon Jackson, a dual threat quarterback from Texas. Utah should be a better football team next season.
I think we were all under the understanding that they would get a little bit bigger and better and more experienced anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know how many of these guys are going to make an instant, immediate impact. Obviously, they have an enormous hole at running back.
Yeah.
But you could, I mean, Rising could, he could come earn it back. It's the same staff, right?
Yeah.
They believed in him once. So we'll see if he's able to get, if he's able to get healthy, or if Utah's coaching staff is like so many others where they view injury as a moral issue, character issue, and write him off. You never know.
Yeah. Washington got three transfers after Jimmy Lake said he hates the transfer culture. And then they go get a kid, a wide receiver from Texas Tech, a DN from Texas A&M, and a quarterback from Colorado State. But, you know, he hates the transfer culture.
You're being unfair. Somebody could hate app-based dating culture, but if you want to get with somebody, Tinder might be your best option. Like, you can't you just them using Tinder doesn't say, you can't say like, oh, then you must enjoy this. Like, no, they have to use the thing that is available to them to keep up in these times. So I think you're just being a hater right now. I think it's perfectly okay. I think it's perfectly okay to say that it's not something that you look highly upon, but that you have to participate in it. I mean, that's just like people with their commute and traffic. Like, I hate being in traffic, but it's cheaper to live in the suburbs.
Nobody,
like, you always justify
your reasonable thought process here, Ralph.
I'm just trying to get to the bottom of why you're hating. Do you like the transfer culture?
I don't care. I think that the coaches transfer all the time.
I don't believe you.
What?
I don't believe you.
What don't you believe?
Because we're sitting here talking about with a glowing review, Oregon's fantastic recruiting class. You care when they choose Oregon? You care? Anybody cares when they choose you?
Yes, I do care when they choose Oregon. But
so you wouldn't prefer that they stick around? You're excited to see them, but you don't care if they come or go.
Well, okay. Here it is too. As far as my team goes, I have not been the victim of a good player being like, all right, I'm out. I mean, yes, Oregon had a bunch of opt-outs this year, but they didn't transfer. They just decided I'm going to the NFL unexpectedly when they were supposed to be coming back. So that was a little annoying. But as far as transfer culture, no. The reason why I don't hate it is because coaches transfer all the time. They make the best decision for themselves. So why should I begrudge a kid who figured out, I'm not going to play here, I signed at the wrong place? There is an element to it where I do believe some of these kids are getting bad advice, that they don't want to play through adversity, which will make them better. Like, I believe that all those things are true. But I also believe that kids should get the one-time transfer as their right.
But don't you hate it when somebody makes an obviously bad decision? Like, they could just have a good college experience, but they transfer into a situation that you know isn't going to be any better. for them. Like, Washington State had a quarterback a while back. His name was Tyler Brugman. He didn't really vibe with Mike Leach, so he decided to transfer to Louisville. And it was, and so did five other quarterbacks. And also, they had just recruited Lamar Jackson. So then it was like, yeah, I don't think that's going to work out for you.
Exactly.
So in year three, he went JUCO. And then he ended up getting picked up by Montana State. And then he grad transferred to Texas A&M. So he ends up in five different places.
He wants to be at a big place, and sometimes that's not the best move for you. If you really want to play, right, once you get to a school, sometimes the writing is on the wall. It's not apparent like immediately because you have to get better. You have to figure it out. So you do have to be able to like sit through some things. Sometimes you're not going to play first year. Sometimes you're not going to play second year. But when you get to that third year, you know, okay, either I have a chance to play here or I don't. And I think that that's kind of where the decisions need to be made. Sometimes I think kids, you know, they don't see it early. But sometimes kids, they do see it early. They're like, listen, I'm transferring from Oregon to Central Arkansas. Because they're like, yo, like, yeah. I'm not, I see that what's here or at USC and I'm going to, you know, Portland State. Because they're like, hold on, I see what's going on. Like, I'm not that guy yet. So I need somewhere where I can go play because I want to play.
Right.
So I'm not mad at those kids. But when you start getting transferred, oh, I want to go to Montana State to go back to Texas A&M. Like, bro, like sometimes that ain't for you. Sometimes your path to your dreams is through North Dakota State.
So the question, and I think that some people who maybe have a, you tell me if it's legitimate, but they might have actually like a legitimate criticism of the times that we're living in and the amount of transfers that are happening, is because if you do make it more available to them, it could increase the likelihood that they quit or they don't persevere. So there's that mindset of it could kind of be for their own good. Like you could put a jar of cookies out on your kitchen table and you could tell your kids, nobody grab any cookies out of this jar while I'm gone. And then you leave. And that temptation is there for them because it's out there in the middle of everything. But if you put it up on a high shelf and you don't let them know it's there, then, you know, maybe they're actually able to accomplish things a little bit better. I know that's a really rudimentary metaphor, but it's just like, do you set them up for failure by making quitting easier? Or is that the wrong perspective to have altogether?
Okay. I think that sometimes kids do quit. They don't want to go through adversity. But sometimes they realize I made a mistake. You know, they're like, and you can't tell the difference between which kid is which, because sometimes that transfer works out for them.
Yeah.
Next thing up, UCLA has big money problems. Like, more money, actually less money, more problems. It's not more money, more problems. More money we come across, the more problems we see. No. They have $21 million operating deficit for 2020. Granted, a lot of teams took a bath in 2020 with no NCAA tournament, no fans in the stands, like normal. But this is the second straight year. But should we even think that this is a big deal, Ralph? Because $20 million loss sounds like a win in a pandemic year.
I suppose, but they were already sort of trending in that direction. Obviously, they're gonna be able to get loans on this stuff. They got Jordan Brand as collateral now. They know that they have future income on the way in and everything like that. And you know, college sports as a business still works. So I don't think too many people are going to lose their job over it. But that also always exists as a possibility to be able to do some short term cost cutting. Because you don't want to go so far into debt or whatever. And so, you know, you never like to see that be the situation, but because it's happened 2 years in a row, it makes you wonder, you know, are, even if things get healthy, is the situation internal? is the issue internal as to where no matter how healthy the situation gets for the conference with new negotiations or with Jordan Brand or anything like that, are they doing things incorrectly that caused them to be in harm's way financially?
Yeah. So Texas, even Texas saw their operating revenues drop by by $23 million to just over $200 million. and UCLA revenues fell to $97 million from $108 million in 2019. Yeah. Yeah, but their expenses did fall from $127 million to $119. And part of that was they spent $2 million less in food. Instead of $5 million in food, they spent $3 million. I told you that $3 million was the number.
Okay, but you also vehemently defended them spending $5 million on food.
Hey, man, these kids are bringing in the money. You feed them the creme de la creme.
How do you, what do you feel like though if you walk onto that campus as a freshman and everybody told you it's filet mignon and lobster, surf and turf every meal, and you get there and it's like
$20 grilled cheese sandwiches?
You get the crab meat with the K now.
You get a crab stick. Dude, I am not in on crab sticks, bro. Like when I go to sushi restaurants, and if I get a California roll, which I like a lot, I'm like, no, give me real crab in mine. Thank you.
I'm completely not surprised by any part of that story.
Why not? Like you don't like real crab in your California roll?
Of course I do.
Change the price from like $6 to $12, but it's worth it. No
substitutes is your brand. I will accept no substitutes. That's very much your brand. I'm more of the like, oh, thank you, sir. Get what I can get. Like this does feel like eating real crab. I feel like I'm on the coast right now. Meanwhile, you're holding a hot dog that someone painted white on one side.
And you know what is crazy, dude? Okay, so my wife, for her birthday, she wanted like a king crab leg dinner, right?
Okay.
So I went to Costco to go get some king crab. And they didn't have it out in the middle, like, because it was like a weekday. So, but I remember I was like, oh, they have it in the freezer section. And on the sticker, it was like 20 pounds for like $430 or whatever, right? So then I was like, oh, we don't need 20 pounds of crab. You know what I mean? Like, it's only like, you know, everybody's not even going to eat crab. So I bought a 10 pounder and we didn't eat all of it. We only ate half of it. And I stuck the rest of them in the freezer. You know, like it's not the colossal legs, but they're giant crab legs of the king crab legs. And then the other day I was making some salmon and I was like, oh, yo, I'm gonna make salmon Oscar style. And then I went in the freezer to go get some crab legs. And then I told my wife, I was like, this is weird. Like, I just went to the freezer and I just randomly have king crab legs just on deck. I thought it was weird.
I don't know, man. That segment brought to you by Pacific Seafood. The premier seafood sponsor
of the Pac-12.
Oh my god! Yeah, I kick us. You got to kick us some of that salmon money. I do wonder though, and I think we actually like talked about it when they signed that deal with Pacific Seafood. Are the schools funneling money for sustenance through these sponsors? Is a sponsor essentially getting their money back? Is that how this is working?
They should be. I'd be like, yo, I need, we need 200 pounds of crab legs a quarter.
So better not see no Gorton's fish sticks.
Yeah, hell no. Nah. So we believe UCLA that they will recover, and they have Jordan Brand now, new athletic director, seems to be doing a really good job. If he can build the football team into a winner, this is a non-issue. Oregon State, though, they got a $50 million anonymous donor. And to help build up their stadium, finish their project, and the athletic facility, all this stuff. $50 million. It's an anonymous donor. So that let people to wonder who the hell it is.
All right, I'm gonna give you a few names of famous Oregon State alumni. You tell me on a scale of 1 to 10 how likely it was this person that had something to do with it.
Okay.
We got Jody Ann Patterson, the 2000 Playboy Playmate of the Year.
She doesn't have $50 million.
Okay. Let's see here. We have Meredith Phillips, star of ABC reality television show The Bachelorette.
She doesn't have $50 million. She may not have $5 million. So okay.
Okay, so we're saying a no to that. Gary Payton, the 2000 Summer Olympics gold medalist. $50 million.
he didn't play in today's NBA.
Okay. How about let's go with
really
we might be getting close. John Young, the former president and CEO of Hewlett Packard, is an Oregon State alum.
He probably has made $50 million, but doesn't have $50 million to give Oregon State.
All right. You tell me if this guy you think actually made any money on this. Randy Conrads, the founder of Classmates.com.
It depends on when he exited.
Okay. And then the one that there's one that
there's only one reasonable former. Okay, go on.
Bernie Newcomb, co-founder of E-Trade.
Oh hell yeah, dude! He's got that type of bread. He's got that type of bread.
Who are you thinking?
The Reesers. Salad.
Okay.
They're the people who are named at, who have the naming rights for Salad Bowl Stadium, but here is the. Here's the thing. I think there are three likely donors. Number one is the Reesers, right? But they would have put their name on it. Like they have their name on the stadium.
Right. Like, they just got anonymous all of a sudden?
Yeah.
It's a stadium project?
Yeah. That has your name on it. Like that's sick. Yeah. The E-Trade guy. He's not going to donate it anonymously. Nope. So that leaves me with two reasonable options. Number one is Phil Knight.
Okay.
Because Phil Knight has made numerous donations to, he's made huge donations to Stanford, even though he did go to Stanford too. We know what he does for Oregon. He's done things for other universities, particularly in the state of Oregon, to help them out. But he doesn't do it publicly. So he is an option. The other, and they are a Nike school. The other option is the boosters club, or like the people, like they didn't want it to be like that they were paying the $50 million themselves. So saying it was anonymous was their best option. So I think that that's probably the number one option. And then Phil Knight's number two.
Did you know that the founder of U-Haul is an Oregon State alum?
I didn't know that. Does he still own the company is the question.
He killed himself in a suicide by car crash back in 1999 in Las Vegas. So I'm thinking it might not have been him.
Correct. It was not him. So those I think are the best options. Who do you think it was?
I think it makes sense that it was sort of a group effort, that they wanted to just make sure that, I so that it was easy to misinterpret it as a one person, $50 million, donation. I don't understand the idea of making an anonymous donation to take your attendance capacity down $9,000 or 9,000 seats.
Yeah.
In an admission that no one goes to Pac-12 football games. It's the same thing that Arizona State eliminated 30,000 seats and it took them $400 million to do that along with other updates and upgrades. It's just, it's embarrassing that all these Pac-12 stadiums keep trying to get smaller.
They're retracting. Like that's
it. Right. And they're taking donations from people in order to do it. It's just, it makes you feel kind of weird inside. Hopefully, but I think your theory makes sense. But Phil Knight could do something like that, but ultimately not want it to look to Oregon, the Oregon faithful that he's helping a rival or something.
Yeah. Just as long as you do these upgrades right, because they just did a re-ranking of all the recruiting facilities and all the football facilities in the nation. Oregon's redid theirs like over 5 years ago, and they're still number two in the rankings, but behind Clemson. Like if you're going to do it, spend the money, do it right. Don't do it half-assed the way then your stuff's outdated later. Like spend the time, do it correctly. The Pac-12 tournament, the Pac-12 basketball tournament is going on. Well, it may or may not happen, but it's still scheduled to go on in Las Vegas. But there are conferences who are considering canceling their Pac-12 tournaments because, well, the Pac-12 tournament and other their conference tournaments, because they fear that they'll have to travel somewhere like Las Vegas for the Pac-12 tournament. They could catch COVID while having to move around and travel, stay out of their own bubbles. And then, because we've had so many college basketball games canceled, postponed, all that. And then that could put them in jeopardy of not being able to play in the tournament. So what would you do if you were in charge?
I'm depressed that we're even having this conversation 12 months after we already lost the basketball conference tournaments and March Madness. Like, I cannot believe that numbers are still like they're getting better in some places, but still completely out of control. What a mess. And so, like, I hate that we're even talking about this. I understand the concern. But if everybody has the same exact concern that they don't want to travel to play,
maybe they shouldn't do it.
Right. But so everyone's like, yeah, it's fine as long as you come to us. How does that not present the same exact risk of people coming to you from somewhere else where you can't control?
Well, the difference. Oh, wait, are you talking about for the NCAA tournament?
For the conference tournament? Are you saying that people would be willing if you could find a way to like centralize it around some of the schools that they'd be willing to do it? Or no, they just want to get rid of it because of the central city?
No. They want to get rid of it because it may cause an issue with COVID for the NCAA tournament. So you could win your conference tournament,
right,
and then get infected or knocked out.
Which is why it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that we didn't just have conference play be a bubble from the big conferences to begin with. Like, if everybody's taking their classes online, why not just bubble it to make sure that people get to play games?
You're making too much sense, Ralph. Stop. No, nobody wants to hear your common
sense. We're going to lose the NCAA tournament trying to make sure that they didn't spend too much money getting to the NCAA tournament, which is going to cost you more money.
At least the smart thing is they're having an NCAA tournament in one city.
Right. So what? People will just want like a 2 week break? Is that, I'm trying to understand. Yes. They just,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're going to supposedly put a break in between so then they can test teams, make sure everybody's good. And then you'll be
so they're going to self bubble, or you'll just get there 2 weeks early?
I don't know. But they're talking about bubbling the whole tournament.
And, oh my gosh.
But if you let one person in who has it, now you have destroyed the entire tournament.
Dude, I hate everything about this. My least favorite thing in the entire world is getting online and seeing what games got canceled that day or postponed. I think the Arizona Coyotes are playing 7 games in a row against the same team.
Yeah.
Because 7 in a row against the same team.
Do you even have the game plan by the fifth one? Or you're like, nah, we do what we did yesterday. That almost worked.
You imagine going on an 0-5 streak, but it's all against the same team?
Dude, that's hilarious.
But these are the lengths that people are going to make sure that they preserve enough of a season to be able to cash some checks. And it just feels, everything feels like forced, but also not thought through.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Like why were we not just assuming the worst this entire time and planning for that? And I don't know, man, it's been embarrassing.
Yeah. Final thing, you guys. Oh, and here's the secret Textoso phone number. 818-293-7547. That's 818-293-7547. You guys can text us. We will get back with you. And that's going to be our direct line of communication to you guys when we have giveaways and all sorts of free things. So make sure you guys share the podcast. Don't share the phone number. They got to come in here to get it. That's just it. These message boards and mods. I just had, for me, this was just kind of a parting shot.
Okay.
And you can comment on it. Message boards and mods, because there are some that are run like free flowing exchange of ideas, all of that. But then some of these mods are heavy handed. Like they don't allow any negative criticism of the team. They'll boot you. They'll kick you. And I think that that's stupid and it's lame. Fans should be, as long as they aren't being abusive to each other, they should be able to come on and vent, be upset, and say pretty much whatever they want to pay. They're paying a subscription, but now you're being heavy-handed. Oh, I didn't like that idea. Oh, they said our information was shoddy on this topic. Because it was. It's okay. And you've run these sites before on Rivals. So what do you have to say for yourself and your peers?
I feel like I'm a moderator you'd be very mad at. I don't know. I don't think I'm a keep the peace person, because I think that people talking trash and being disagreeable is part of the fun. Like people want that excitement and that action. And if they don't want that kind of group, then they'll go to one that has less of it. People can kind of pick and choose what it is they want. And as long as it doesn't get personal, and it almost always does. So you have to step in and let people know, like, hey, it's like you're the one that took it a little bit too far. So everybody has to step back from this, or there's going to be a consequence. You just have to kind of manage it the same way that you would a parent. And yes. However, if I was the one in charge of the forum and it was people that were just going on and like calling me an idiot and giving me $5 a month to like for the right to call me an idiot, I would feel like I was contributing to my own demise of mental health. That like, if somebody's allowed to give me $5 then punch me in the face,
I would be okay with that. Just keep giving me the $5.
Yeah, I'm not built like that. So I get the people who take it personally and maybe operate a little heavy-handed. That might be the only way that they feel like they can continue in this business without going completely insane, because you are pretty much a school bus driver when you manage one of those forums. And I've had people, I'll tell you, probably my favorite forum is the Rivals Cal one, because it's just super familial. Everybody's always been super cool to me in there. I've had a lot of experience in a lot of other forums, maybe under with an anonymity or maybe with a pseudonym before I ever came on to work for Rivals, that I would say that there were definitely times when I was part of the problem. You know, I had a moderator. My pastor of my church was the moderator of our fantasy baseball league, and he straight up kicked me out. We've been in situations like that, but I will say that as the manager of a forum, granted it's high school, I do keep up, especially because they're talking about minors. I never really want them to go into talking about other people's kids in a negative way, nor do I want them to talk negatively about like high school football journalists. That seems weird. So I just, I'm really heavy handed. I don't think you'd like the way I run a forum.
Well, it's okay. You guys, thank you guys for listening to the Pac-12 Apostles podcast. We appreciate your time. Appreciate your energy. Make sure you share. Use the secret Textoso line as well. Catch you guys next episode. More pimping big stuff to come, man. I don't know why I said that.